Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's a freaky Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's time for the AEW Wrestling Inc. Dynamite After Show, and have we got a show for you. We've got Jon Moxley taking out everybody. We've got Shelton Benjamin versus Swerve in a banger, and they debut of Bobby Lashley. But before we get into all that, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by none other than Jimmy Corderas and George Hermosa. Starting, George, how are you this evening?
By the way, this is going to be a AEW Dynamite review show and also a live reaction show of the Dodgers in the World Series, because they are currently playing right now, and it's 5-5, and I'm very, very nervous.
Wait a minute. Wasn't it 5-0 just a little while ago?
It was.
These Dodgers, they don't know how to job out, right, Jimmy?
Yeah, what a false finish.
Jimmy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Just sipping my little Java here. You know?
Little Java. What is that? What does that cup say? Oh, pothead. Oh, nice.
Coffee.
You sure you didn't have RVD on Wrapping It Up podcast recently?
Not recently. But I am fighting through it because I got a little bit of a, I don't know if you can see the swelling there. I got a little tooth issue, so I got getting that fixed tomorrow, but I'm here now.
No. Oh, yeah, your eyebrow looks a little, you know, yeah, I can see it.
Right there?
Yeah.
I thought you gotten the ring again, Jimmy. I thought you laid down the law with some folks.
No. It's going to take a lot more than an invite for me to do that.
Well, we absolutely have a whole lot of stuff to talk about on what I thought was a very Fright Night fueled episode of AEW Wrestling. Before we get to all that, though, we do have a lot of news we want to talk about. First off, something that's a little heavy, something that's a little sad. I want to talk about Chris Bay, a TNA wrestler who was unfortunately injured. And I don't know the details of the injury. I haven't read specifically what it is, and so I don't even want to speculate anything about what it could be, even though there are some, I guess, some ideas out there. But it's a very sad injury. But something cool that's happening, Jimmy, from all this is a GoFundMe was started, and a lot of people, including fellow pro wrestlers, have chipped in to try to help Chris Bay out financially. And one of the cool things about pro wrestling, and you'll see this, is wrestlers from across the spectrum, wherever they may be, different companies all come together. One of the things that's cool about pro wrestling is, as tribalistic as it can be sometimes in moments like this, it absolutely is a time when they all come together to help each other out.
That's absolutely true, especially for someone like a Chris Bay, and anybody who knows him can tell you what a great guy he is. He's not just a great in-ring talent, but he's a good human being. And it's unfortunate that this happened to him. Like you said, Jack, we don't know the extent of the injuries. All we know is that it required surgery. So that means most likely he will be out for a lengthy amount of time. So it warms my heart to see what's going on now with the wrestling community. Like you said, everybody from across the spectrum, it doesn't matter what three letters or four letters precede the company name, everybody's reaching out and showing their support. And that is fantastic to see. It warms my heart to see that we are a community. Guys work for different companies, but at the same time, they're still friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's unfortunately others who have that tribalistic attitude, but it's not amongst the boys.
Yeah, I always think it's funny when people talk about, like, why would they sign here when their friends are there or whatever? Their friends are everywhere. they're friends with everybody in the locker rooms. And George, injuries are so scary in pro wrestling. It doesn't matter how good you are. That's the risk of what these wrestlers do every single time they step into that ring. And that's why we need to be so appreciative of the things they do and appreciate every time we get to see them out there.
Yeah, that's crazy, because how many injuries have we seen just from, like, simple moves? Like, we saw, I mean, the one that sticks out the most is probably the one from Triple H back in 2001. But also, yeah, shout out to Chris Bay. It's so funny how you mentioned how tribalism only really exists in, you know, through the fans. Just a small story, because I don't want to bore anybody. And I remember in 97, I went to, like, a WCW house show, and at the same time, they were having a WWF house show. But before before the show, the WWF guys were like Shamrock, Triple H, China, Sunny were all doing some kind of like appearance. And then like randomly, like Hall, Nash, and X-Pac or Six showed up and they're all mingling and being friends. And my mind was blown. I'm like, wait, that's WWF guys, you know, chanting it up with WCW guys. Like, I had no idea. And this was before I even knew of a click. But yeah, like this goes back, like, you know, the boys looking out for the boys, you know, the girls looking out for the girls and vice versa, boys looking out for girls, you know, girls looking out for boys. But yeah, it's always cool to see the community, you know, kind of stick together. I think Edge probably, I think he donated maybe like 10 grand, I think I saw, mm-hmm. which is, you know, mm-hmm. amazing. So yeah, it's always really cool to see everybody supporting each other. But like you said, you know, tribalism is not real. I mean, it's real in the sense of like, obviously it's a thing, but it's really like, you know, like everybody's friends, you know, mm-hmm. and if anything, there's probably more people that don't like each other within the actual promotion, as opposed to like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't like you because you're an AEW. Like, no, that doesn't exist. But, you know, I'm sure there's like maybe an AEW person that doesn't like another AEW person.
Yeah, when people don't like each other in pro wrestling, it has nothing to do with the company they work for.
No, there's personality clashes everywhere, and that's all it is. But whether it's jockeying for position on the card, whatever you think it is. But, you know, for the most part, everybody's got each other's back. And when push comes to shove, you know, they're showing it right now for Chris Bey.
It was, I saw it now on Wrestling Inc. They have a list of some of the wrestlers who have donated. And it was funny, you know, you see like Matt Hardy on there. I think a lot of folks were on there. But then for, it said Cody Reynolds, and then in parentheses, Cody Rhodes. And at first I thought that Cody had written that in the donation, like we wouldn't know who that is, and he had to clarify who this was. And then I was, oh no, Wrestling Inc. put that, so we know whose name that is. But at first I thought it was Cody Rhodes being like, no, this, just so you don't, just so you know, this is who I am. And it made me giggle a little bit at the idea of that. But it is a it seems like a pretty big injury. Chris Bey is someone who, everything I've heard, is a very well loved person. I got to work a show with him, luckily, a few years ago for Championship Wrestling. He was there for a taping. Didn't get to chat with him a whole lot, so I'm not going to act like we're super close. But in all my interactions with him, he was a super cool guy. So wishing him the best. And if you have a couple bucks, check out the GoFundMe and throw it his way. I'm sure.
Even I think they're doing something in Pro Wrestling Tees as well, where if they buy like a certain shirt, I think they're matching like the proceeds,
yeah, right. And if you go to the TNA website or their Twitter account, you can, there's an auction going on in the near future. You can check it out there as well.
Yeah, so definitely check that out and help out someone who could absolutely use it. We also have someone else with some sad news. Unfortunately, we're starting today with a bunch of sad news, but New Japan Pro Wrestling star El Phantasmo revealed he has cancer. He said in a message, quote, "Just want to get this out of the way so everyone doesn't worry about me. The last 2 weeks, I've had a bunch of scans and tests done, and doctors have found a little tumor of cancer. Things are thankfully happening really fast, but I have amazing family, friends, and fans by my side, and I'm so grateful to have the support of Warriors who have gone through the same thing before, and I look forward to help those going through it next." George, a powerful message from someone who's going through something that is terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and shout out to him for being, you know, obviously staying positive, because really there's really nothing more that you can just kind of just think positive about the situation. But yeah, great talent. One of the shining stars in New Japan, especially with the whole expansion into America that they've had in the last 10 years. But yeah, I mean, looks like he's going to kick out, not just kick out, but maybe a kick out and maybe even before a one count. So it's good that they caught it early, and hopefully we will see more of him in the ring soon.
Yeah, anyone who's dealt with cancer or knows someone who has knows it's a scary thing, and we definitely are wishing him the best, Jimmy.
Yeah, absolutely, because like you said, cancer, it could hit anyone at any time, and it sneaks up on you, and then you don't know it. But it sounds like he's got a positive attitude, and he's got a good team of medical staff looking after him, which is a great thing. So we wish him nothing but the best, you know. And you know, that positive attitude does go a long way with something like this, because if you start festering and let it fester inside, you know, that negative energy, I believe negative energy has a negative effect on your body. Positive energy has a positive effect on your body. So I'm glad he's keeping a positive attitude.
I agree completely. And of course, thoughts are with him. Speaking of someone who's on the other side of some bad news, Kenny Omega was recently announced by New Japan Pro Wrestling on their website that he would be making a special appearance at New Japan Pro Wrestling Power Struggle, scheduled to be held on November 4th in Osaka. In their announcement, New Japan pondered what would come from Omega's special appearance, his first in New Japan since New Year's Dash 2023, teasing it could be related to Omega's reunion with Tanahashi earlier this month. George, I don't know if he's going to be getting physical or if this means that Kenny Omega is going to be in ring action, but I'd have to assume that this means he's closer if he is getting involved with stuff during the shows.
Yeah, I think so too. It's been a while since we've seen Kenny Omega, not just in action, but just in general. I know he had that one appearance that he had, was it like 6-7 months ago or so, on AEW. So the fact that he's, you know, open not just to making an appearance, but also traveling to Japan, I think that's a pretty big deal as far as one step closer to seeing him in his highly anticipated in-ring return.
Yeah, Jimmy, I think that obviously it goes without saying, make sure you're healthy, make sure that everything is A-okay before you do anything. But as wrestling fans here in the United States, as a fan of AEW, can't wait for Kenny Omega to get back and be on TV again. This, I think, is getting a lot of people very eager. This feels a little bit like preseason sports, you know, where you're like, hey,
right,
it's not here for real, but that means it's right around the corner, right?
Yeah, hopefully so. And sometimes it's a wake-up call, because in the wrestling business, the guys sometimes feel invincible because they go through a lot of hard knocks throughout their careers. But then something like this hits you, and then that reality sets in. So I'm glad he took his time, got it taken care of. They got it in time. And it seems like he's on his way back, and that's a great thing. And it's only it makes me already start the fantasy book. Ooh, what can we do with Kenny Omega when he comes back? You know, because he's already got that situation built in with the Young Bucks. So yes, it's going to be fun to see what happens when he eventually does come back.
That they clearly have been teasing. They did a little bit more of that tonight. We'll talk about it for sure. But something that also happened tonight, which we'll talk about, is Jon Moxley was running wild. On October 29th, Moxley filed the trademark for the term Death Riders for use in wrestling entertainment merchandise. The Death Rider is the name of Moxley's finishing move, or a variant of it at least. However, with regards to this trademark filing, it seems likely that Death Riders will be used to refer to a group of people rather than a wrestling move. Jimmy Corderas, they didn't say it tonight on the show, but is this the name of Moxley's new group? They haven't called themselves the Blackpool Combat Club in some time.
No, we haven't got a definitive name for that group. Maybe it is the name, and I'm fine with it. I think that's a good, different name, especially for them. And what I love, too, is the business savvy of a lot of the wrestlers today. I know back in my day, guys would, you know, take care of business, but it was outside the scope of wrestling. Like, they could take care of their financial situations outside of wrestling. Now guys are taking care of their own properties, their own intellectual properties, which is smart. You know, Matt Cardona, look at Matt Cardona, somebody like that who's just doing fabulous. So I like that aspect. Wrestlers, smart.
It's so funny. Cody Rhodes was interviewed today, and they, I think it was the Andrew Schultz podcast, and they showed the Bullet Club logo, and they were talking about how cool it looks. And Cody Rhodes was saying that that was a Finn Balor thing, but he doesn't think Finn Balor made any money off of all the sales and the millions that logo has made with shirts. Because it's not his. And you think, man, going back to that ownership thing, that's why it's so important. If Finn Balor owned the rights to that thing, he could probably sail off into the sunset off the Bullet Club merch alone. But that's why it's smart. And I'm glad that those guys are getting all that locked in and squared away. I want to get squared away on an episode of AEW Dynamite, a Fright Night Dynamite. But before we do, as always, thank you so much to everyone who is watching the show or listening later on. Appreciate all the likes, the comments, the shares, subscribes. Appreciate all the lurkers. And appreciate everyone who is in our chat with us as well. Danny Cochran, Laura Rock, Ronald Edwards III, haven't seen you before. Beer Money, who says, best Dynamite in a while, but sadly so many people watching this insane World Series game. You're probably right, but that's why I do not care about ratings. J.R. Smith, Carlos Pereira, The King Art, Robert Cortez, 9 out of 10, says, Monopoly Man. George Bartley, we got Brianne, we got Josie, Jose Topete, Daniel, Barry, we got Stalking You with 2, little dog emojis. My little doggy had surgery today and she's recovering. So I appreciate the extra emoji, even though you knew nothing about it. I'll just assume. Mike Martin saying Jimmy is a hippie, referring back to the coffee mug, I believe.
It's coffee, Mike.
Corey Pride saying Bobby is the worst kept secret in wrestling, but sure glad to see him. We will talk about that. Fernando adding that Dynamite was fire tonight. Sonny Sitar in the chat, Killer Demons, Maria, Cold Knight, and George Bartley. I think I said that already, Laura Rock. Beer Money with a question before we get into all this, though. And George, we're starting with you. George, if you guys were to dress up as a wrestler for Halloween, who are you choosing?
Oh, man, put me on the spot, Will. Yeah, I got to say, I think the person that it's probably the easiest to dress as and without getting any kind of criticism has got to be John Cena, because you won't be able to see me.
No. You're just not going to the party. Is that it?
Pretty much. No, honestly, I think it'd be fun. I mean, I love going to the Comic Cons and seeing like all the different types of like Randy Savage, because he's got so many different types to choose from. Whether I saw like last time I went to the Comic Con, somebody was dressed like the Slim Jim Randy Savage, the yellow and the red, which is always pretty cool. But I don't know. I think I'd probably try to be a little creative. I'd probably do with like the face paints, so maybe like a run of the Road Warriors or something.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be the Road Warriors would be a fun one. Jimmy. If you could dress up as a wrestler, who are you dressing up as for Halloween?
Well, we used to do it on Aftermath every year for Halloween up here in Canada for the TV show. And I just pulled up a picture since I happen to have, I don't know if you'll be able to see this if you're watching at home, right in the corner there, myself.
The genius. Santina.
Are you the genius?
Nope.
You're Al Snow?
Yes.
I have Al Snow?
The Job Squad thing.
So who was the genius? Who was dressed up as a genius?
Oh, Nug Nargang.
Oh,
the genius is a good one.
Yeah. And Anthony is just, I guess, Anthony. Santino. Yeah. So we had fun like that. And 1 year I dressed up as Triple H, had the long hair, the cut off leather jacket and the whole bit. So
that's a good one, too. I've always said if I was going to dress up as a wrestler, I'm dressing up as Buff Daddy, Buff Bagwell. I'm getting the top hat. I'm getting the suspenders. I'm going to have the fake tattoo on my arm. Well, his is real, but I'm going to have a fake one. Buff Daddy is who I would dress up as.
I want to get a megaphone and do Jimmy Hart 1 year.
Jimmy Hart would be a good one, too. I feel like he'd be excited to see you dressed up as Jimmy Hart, too.
Then I could sing.
I feel like Jimmy Hart would want to get a picture with you dressed up as Jimmy Hart.
Oh my goodness, he still apologizes to this day for the WrestleMania 4 thing.
Jimmy Hart's a treasure.
I know.
We all know a great worker when we see one, and that's what the guys at 5-9 Whiskey are. Like a performer who leaves it all in the ring, the crew at Troll Co. have made a bourbon that's all about grit and sweat. You see, two old field guys figured, why not turn our daily grind into something you can sip on? And who wouldn't want a splash of hard work in their whiskey? 5-9 is made with 100% Kentucky corn, bringing you those crisp, fresh flavors with a smooth finish. They even took the trip to Owensboro, home of the 10th oldest distillery in Kentucky. They put in the work. The name 5-9 is a nod to those who clock in from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., not the 9-to-5 life. These are the real champions who put in the sweat, tears, and more. Real-life road warriors. They work hard. And now they're pouring that same energy into the whiskey. So why not grab a bottle? Help these guys out. They're literally drinking their profits. Cheers. Head to 59whiskey.com. That's FIVENINEWhiskey.com. And use promo code WRESTLING20, that's 20, for 20% off your first order. Tools down, bottoms up.
We also got Corey Pride in the chat, Mr. X. Danny Cochran saying Brie mode. Thank you so much. Lots of folks here in the chat. Let's talk about this episode of Fright Night. We start with a cool Halloween-themed intro that leads into the usual Jon Moxley group video, but Orange Cassidy cuts it off. He says this isn't who he is. Orange Cassidy says he's not a leader, but the young men and women of AEW don't know how much danger they're in with Jon Moxley. He says Jon Moxley doesn't need AEW, but Orange Cassidy does need AEW. So Orange Cassidy is going to stop John Moxley by challenging John Moxley for the AEW World Championship because he's freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy. He's the next AEW World Heavyweight Champion, and he still doesn't need a catchphrase. Jimmy Corderas, in my opinion, this was exactly what we needed from Orange Cassidy tonight. But what say you?
I agree. He needed a change in attitude, and we got that, even though he was saying he's not the leader he should, you know, that he should be. But we got a different Orange Cassidy. It was more intense. There was more fire in his promo. You know, that little thing, he kept the glasses on. He took them off at the right time to show that intensity. And challenging for the title, I get it. I get it. It's his gimmick with the knapsack or whatever it's called, his little tote bag, backpack. So saying taking the title out of his duffel bag and putting in his backpack made sense. But I like what I saw from him. I like a change because for the last 5 years, there hasn't been any difference in the presentation of the Orange Cassidy character. Now we're getting difference, and I like that.
Yeah, I was curious what you were going to think about the backpack thing because I didn't know if you were going to say, hey, that's still a little too silly. But I like that you liked it. I agree. I feel like it still grounds him to who he was. And it's not just a, hey, I'm a totally different person today. There's still just enough of the callback, but it's still just serious enough that I really appreciated this one. George, what were your thoughts on this opening segment? Do you believe in Orange Cassidy?
Well, first off, I want to say overall, I think this is a great episode of Dynamite in terms of character development. And we'll get into a little bit more of that. You know, later on in the show. But yeah, I think overall this was a great promo by Orange Cassidy. We saw glimpses of that like a little less than a year ago when he lost the international championship to John Moxley and then him having to lose and then him coming back with that victory. Although I do have a complaint. There we go. And just because I know there's been a lot of NWO vibes compared to what they're doing, and they've openly said that they're waging war against AEW, right? Like, tell me when I'm telling lies. Like, they're waging war against AEW. So why is the show opening up with all these BCC segments? It's almost as if, like, they're rolling out the red carpet. And I know they're supposed to be, like, these revolutionaries or whatever. But, like, it feels like, you know, why are we getting this? At least when we saw with the NWO, Jack Farmer, what do we always see right before every single NWO promo?
Paid for, the following announcement has been paid for by the New World.
Because why would WCW, why would WCW do anything? Yeah, why would they do anything to put over the NWO? So when you have, and this is the part where they think they have to kind of tread carefully, because we've seen it in WWE, when you see kind of the backstage things, you know, it's almost as if they're pulling back the curtain, but they're only still, they're still deciding what they're going to show. So we've already established that in AEW, the guy that's in, you know, the headset is Tony Khan. So why is Tony Khan allowing this group to kind of, I don't want to say, do your thing. Do your thing as far as being, you know, rebellious and you know, beating everybody up. But when it comes to actual production, I know maybe I'm pulling back the curtain a little too much, but when it comes to the actual presentation, why are you pretty much allowing these rebels to do run amok upon your show when they've openly waged war upon AEW? At least give me a promote. This following has been paid for by the BC or whatever it is, you know, or something to explain why they're, you know, doing so. Like, they shouldn't be having theme music. They shouldn't be having the screen, whatever. That's just my thing. I think it was cool in the beginning, but now we're getting to the point where, like, okay, well, now we know what they're here for. How do we put a stop to this without, or how do we keep it going without, with while still making it make sense?
Yeah, Jimmy, I'd like your thoughts on that, because I totally get what George is saying. I also feel like if you said paid for by the Blackpool Combat Club or whatever we're calling them, then it would definitely be a ripoff of NWO at this point. I feel like you still need the video pack. The video packages have worked for me, so I feel like that suspension of disbelief is okay for me. But you're the ref. You call it down the middle. What do you think? Do you think that that's going too far, or do you think they should completely act like non-members of AEW?
Well, I think George has a very valid point there. Why would they open the show with that video package? Well, why don't they come out of the video package showing the BCC or whatever they're going to be called coming out of the production truck?
Yes, yes, 1,000%.
The very simple fix. And they say, if you don't run our whatever it is, our video package or whatever, again, we'll be back. Threaten them. Yeah. Why not? And then Tony Khan could be saying to the truck, you know, show a picture of Tony Khan. I know he doesn't like being on TV, but show him saying, hey, what are you guys doing showing that video? You know, hey, we're in fear for our lives, you know?
Yeah. And then even if you have something, and then even if something like where maybe this week it happens there, then next week you have maybe wrestlers protecting maybe the production truck, and then they'll find another way to kind of like, you know, hey, like, you know, I got your family on speed dial or whatever, you know, I got your family's mm-hmm. address just with one click of the, or something, whatever, you know, just, I'd like for them to kind of be something where we know Tony's running the show. So now I want some kind of explanation on why we're still allowing these mm-hmm. presentations to be shown on a weekly basis.
Fair point. Not going to argue it. I feel like they get away with it, but I also agree the points you're making here. I would say if my this is a very small production nitpick, felt like they should have hit Orange Cassidy's music right after he finished his promo. It felt weird that there was no music after he finished his promo. And then Excalibur again kind of chuckled afterwards as we came back. He's like, crazy night action. We got a lot to catch up on. I was like, this is a very serious moment, dude. Like, convey that it was serious. But he was kind of laughing at what just happened. I was like, this was serious. Like, be serious. This is a huge moment. And so that was mm-hmm. my nitpick of that moment. But Jimmy, I have a question for you. Sonny Sitara mm-hmm. brings it up. Says Renee ruins the storyline with what Moxley's doing. Obviously, in real life, they are hitched. Do you think that is an issue, or do you think them just kind of pretending that relationship doesn't exist for the time being is the right move?
Well, for the time being, I see it being maybe not the right move, but hopefully in the future, someone calls her out on it. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, whether it's one of the talents, maybe it's someone like a Daniel Garcia who says, you know what? You need to talk to your husband and tell him to calm down, or whoever it is, pick somebody. But at the same time, maybe she has, I heard a certain Hall of Famer, two-time Hall of Famer, say that why don't they have a sit down, Renee and John, and they try to talk it out. And you have Marina Shafir. I can't pronounce her name properly.
Marina Shafir. Yeah.
Shafir, yeah. Sitting there with John Moxley while they're doing a face to face, and she's wondering what the heck is going on here, John. Why not? You know, WWE does those empty arena settings for the little one-on-one sometimes. It wouldn't mm-hmm. be, if you're going to steal something, why not steal something like that? It's an idea, at least. Anyways, people know that there are couples. Use it.
Leonard Jones says Renee simply saying Mox hasn't been home in weeks would cover it. George, you were shaking your head though. Because you are one for absolute realism when it comes to production, but what's your thoughts on this couple?
What did Renee Paquette get hired to do in AEW? She's not hired to throw around her moral compass. She got hired to do a job. So she's not intervening because she is a professional.
News people have no moral compass.
It's that simple. You're not there to give your, let me talk to my husband who's waging war on AEW. No, you're there to be a professional. What's on the run sheet? Who are you supposed to interview? Jack Farmer, you've been hired to do the same exact job. Do you think they're going to sit there and pay you to be like, oh, well, I think this person is, you, I know you sound nothing like that, but like, you know, I think, I don't like the way Peter Pretty Avalon rolled his eyes at this person. Like, you know, like you're not there to do that. You're there. Look at the run sheet. Look who you're supposed to be interviewing. You're not there to give your opinion.
I'm there to catch checks.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't give your opinion, but at least show some kind of, don't act like everything is hunky-dory and nothing happened.
I think as long as they're separate, it's fine. But if she is interviewing, let's say, and we'll talk about, you know, interviewing one of the people involved in this situation, like if she interviews Orange Cassidy next week, she can't pretend like she doesn't know who John Moxley is. But if she's back there just like interviewing, as we'll talk about in a moment, Adam Page, I think it's fine. As long as she's separate, I think it's fine. But if they do anything that crosses paths, she can't pretend like there's not a connection there. That's my thought anyways.
Fair.
Anyone in the chat, let us know your thoughts. I'm curious what you think about that whole thing. Sonny, great question, though. Thank you for sending that through. We got a matchup. Adam Cole, baby, versus Buddy Matthews. Adam Cole almost hurts his ankle again coming off the ring apron. Buddy Matthews starts working the ankle, and eventually the ringside doctor says the match needs to end. Matthews goads Cole back into the ring twice, allowing Cole to eventually get the win. The two share a respectful handshake, but the lights go out, and when they come back on, Adam Cole is face-to-face with Malakai Black. Jimmy, I want your thoughts on Adam Cole's return to the ring, but also as a referee, I want your thoughts on the, because I saw Twitter blow up about this, the not counting the out of the ring 10 count while Adam Cole was being checked on by the doctor.
Okay, first of all, I'll say that I did enjoy the match because it made sense. Him selling the ankle and Buddy Matthews going after the previously injured body part made perfect sense. It was storytelling 101 in a wrestling match. And I have to give Adam Cole credit, being out of the ring for so long, he actually looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. So, but that spot kind of irked me. I didn't like, okay, the doctor comes in to check on him, to check on his ankle. I don't have a problem with the official going down and checking as well. But him getting helped up and being escorted to the back without the referee ringing the bell to make it sound like the match is over because he can't continue. And forget the 10 count stuff. You're not going to get a 10 count with a doctor helping him to the back. Ring the bell. He can't continue. You would have got more mileage out of that, in my opinion. He rings the bell at the end of the match while he's getting help back. He looks back at the ring, goes, oh, no, 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 no. Hobbles back, gets in there, and continues the match. And then they decide to restart the match instead of Buddy Matthews calling him a, you know what, the B word.
Right, right.
I didn't think that was necessary. I think that might have got a little more mileage, a little more fire under Adam Cole's behind, if that makes more sense.
Yeah, it was. I agree with you because it does. Because I was going to say, for people who are against him not counting to 10 while checking, I would say other sports do the same thing. They have injury timeouts in other sports. So the idea of an injury timeout doesn't bother me. But you're right. As soon as he starts heading to the back, the match is over.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't be like, it's not like, it's weird for them to be like, but is he going to go all the way to the back? Like, that's a weird mindset if you're trying to think of reality.
Right.
Of what they're trying to present there. So that's, I love that answer, Jimmy. George, on this match, what I loved about this matchup from an in-ring standpoint is I love that Buddy Matthews didn't treat this like they were evenly matched. Like, you know, sometimes these matchups, they'll kind of go tit for tat. It'll be like, you know, evenly matched guys. Buddy Matthews, clearly bigger, clearly more powerful, very fast. Kind of muscled Cole around in a very realistic way that you'd imagine someone like him doing. And I think it made the match as a whole better for it. What was your takeaway from this matchup?
I think this was a fun match, especially with Adam Cole, it being his first match in a very long time. And Buddy Matthews, who we all know is, oh my God, like that. We've been praising him for nearly like 10 years or so. So I think they work well together. Yeah, I think overall, I think it was a great showcase to show that Adam Cole is back, that we are going to be seeing a lot more of Adam Cole in the ring on a regular basis, not just coming out every week telling us story time, baby, because I think it gets a little old sometimes, especially telling the same thing. Although I did like the promo that he did afterwards.
Yeah, yes. And we'll talk about that. But Brandy says Buddy had the crowd tonight. That was something I noticed too, Jimmy. It felt like for this being Adam Cole's return match, it felt like that crowd wanted Buddy Matthews to win that. If I had never watched pro wrestling and I was just listening to the crowd, I'd say Buddy Matthews was the guy that they all wanted to see win tonight. They were trying to count out Adam Cole. They were chanting Buddy throughout the match. I mean, I think we've all been big Buddy Matthews fans, but like, is this something that in this situation, people were cheering for Buddy Matthews?
Yeah, it is interesting because Adam Cole, you figured, especially since the return, would get the biggest reaction. People want to see Adam Cole's return. They want to see him do well again. That's why that finish didn't work, because it got the crowd on Buddy Matthews' side. It kind of, they were kind of on the fence to begin with, but that just pushed them over the fence, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, no, it does, because it started to feel, I get what they were trying to do. They're trying to make Adam Cole look like he'll keep fighting. He's not frail, as they say. But it actually, in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like you lost like three times and they kept letting you come back instead of him fighting through. I think is how it played to a lot of people, especially in the audience that maybe weren't able to hear the commentary. I thought that was interesting. My nitpick on this one was O'Reilly's watching. Cool. MJF is watching on, cool, but clearly MJF was pre-recorded with a much better camera because it looks so cinematic. You know what I'm talking about? It's so cinematic the way MJF was sitting there and the sound was different. But like, so you could tell he just pre-recorded himself like sitting there. You know, like it, right. I don't know. Visually, it was just like, okay, I get what you're doing, but I don't think it worked. George, you mentioned the promo, him cutting a promo, talking about how he had to do the devil thing to get revenge on MJF, even though it might not have been the best thing, a best way to go about it. Do you feel better about this rivalry after this? Because I know last time you were very upset about the promo Adam cut and you didn't feel like it was good enough. Do you think this fixed it?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it really made the situation better. It's still a little weird on why they're feuding. And I know I've said like the people involved, they're great. But let me just make this quick analogy. How many movies have you seen where the cast is fantastic, but the movie just sucked? There are plenty out there. And again, nothing again. And again, maybe down the road, it'll be the same people involved in a story that has nothing to do with, you know, whatever they're trying to explain. But for the story that they're doing right now, I'm still a little like weird. Like, I don't think it's good. Just having the roles reversed for whatever reason. I don't know. Just like, I knew you were a bad guy from the beginning. Like, no, like you really saw a lot of depth with that MJF character. So I don't know. I just kind of get it over. I know that it's probably going to be done at Full Gear and they're both going to move on, but I'm looking forward to them having a good match like we saw at Wembley, but I really hope they both go their separate ways after that.
Yeah, I'd be happy if they just never mentioned the devil stuff ever again and just kind of just moved. Like now we're into the mat. Now we can just talk about what's coming and forget how we got here. Jimmy, one thing that I didn't like about this promo. I love Adam Cole's promo. I think he delivers great. I agree. I think George's commentary on a great actor in a bad movie is a good comparison. But he said something that bothered me, Jimmy. And I don't want to go on. I don't want everyone to get on a rant. I feel like this is going to light up the chat. I feel like this is going to be a big thing. But he was talking about all the people that MJF has hurt. And he was like, look what you did to Wardlow. And I was like, well, cool. Wardlow, but you know who else abandoned Wardlow? Adam Cole.
Adam Cole, baby.
Adam Cole also abandoned Wardlow.
Right.
So that was, what are you doing? He was your friend too, Adam Cole. What are you doing?
It's revisionist history. Sometimes that happens. What can I tell you? It's a good catch. You know, that one slipped by me. I didn't really catch that one. But now that you said it, well, maybe he should have left that name out.
I'm hoping that this is a tease for the return of Wardlow. Hoping. What, fingers crossed.
Refresh number 4?
Let's hope. Maybe. Fourth time's a charm. Danny Cochran says, I'm starting to agree with George. Am I turning to the dark side?
Welcome to the dark side.
You had that queued up, George.
I love that. The Barry White voice that came out of him. You know?
Yeah, sure.
James Earl Jones. I mean,
that's right. Yeah, and I'm never, ever going to give you up.
We've got Kyle Fletcher. He comes out with his streamlined haircut and calls out Will Ospreay. Instead, however, he gets his tag team partner, Mark Davis. Mark Davis says, you've changed. But Kyle Fletcher says Don Callis opened his eyes. Kyle Fletcher offers Mark Davis a spot in the Don Callis family, but Mark Davis leaves him hanging. George, you and I have argued about the star power of Kyle Fletcher. Are you on the Kyle Fletcher bus, or are you still letting this bandwagon pass you by?
So, in case, because I know everybody was blowing up my DMs because I was not on the show last week, and I mentioned it on Twitter that if I was on the show last week, you would have heard me do nothing but praise that segment with Kyle Fletcher because he showed, you know, finally breaking out of a shell. But I will say as much, and I mentioned it before, as much character development that we've seen in the last week or two with Kyle Fletcher. And I love that they brought back Mark Davis. I've been wondering where he's up to. And I've been wondering how they're going to incorporate him into this whole story. Is it going to equate to wins? Because it's great that we're seeing Kyle Fletcher do his thing. But now, can he beat guys like an Adam Cole, a Hangman Page, a Jay White, you know, these guys that are really, you know, kind of gatekeeper to the main events? But can Kyle Fletcher become one of those guys that really get into that upper echelon of being a top guy. And again, that's what we have to wait and see. I do think that when we do see that inevitable Kyle Fletcher at Will Ospreay match, Kyle Fletcher pretty much has to win that match, or else it's going to be all for nothing.
Mm-hmm. I do believe he has to win because he shaved his head. If he mm-hmm. is going to lose and he shaved his head, then you could have made that a match, you know, mm-hmm. hair versus right. hair match. Mm-hmm. And he could just be like, Will, I don't want you to look like me. I'm going to shave your head. No, you know, whatever. We'll get there. But Jimmy, what are your thoughts on the promo? Mark Davis, I believe, was injured. I don't know if he's fully back yet, but it's good to see him back on TV. Jimmy, sometimes AEW rivalries, I always feel like, can be a little bit too straightforward. It's kind of like in our main mm-hmm. event. It's kind of like, hey, I have a problem with you. Okay, we'll have a match. And then
right.
you have the match set up. With Mark Davis showing up instead of Will Ospreay, I feel like that adds a little bit of a wrinkle to the Kyle Fletcher, Will Ospreay situation that might give us a little bit of mileage out of it. Do you like this wrinkle? Do you like this addition to Mark Davis? Or do you feel like let's get to the main course already?
I like the fact that they brought in Mark Davis because, like you said, it prolongs the eventual Kyle Fletcher, Will Ospreay match. Because mm-hmm. one of the things they tend to do is we talk about them all the time not telling stories. They do tell stories, but sometimes they blow through them so fast, they're not even a chapter long. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that at least they're taking their time. They've got Mark Davis in there to be that wedge between Kyle Fletcher and when he eventually gets to Will Ospreay. Now, whether the fans will be on board with this little mini rivalry before that one, that's a different story. But at least they're taking their time getting to Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay. Don't rush it.
Well, in the chat, everyone, question of the day, are you team Will Ospreay or team Kyle Fletcher in this whole thing? Guess what? I'm team Kyle Fletcher, baby. I'm about to cut my hair just like his, just so I can be part of that bandwagon.
I would pay money to see that.
Yeah, it'd have to be in a matchup. That's the thing.
Okay.
Me and Emily May for the battle of the best hair on Wrestling Inc. Except I'd win at the end. Corey Pride says, we'll ask Team Ospreay. Laura Rock says Ospreay. While everyone's answering that question, I want to throw George to you just real quick. How did you like the vibe of Fright Night? The orange ropes, the cemetery, the all that fun stuff. Did you think they did a pretty good job?
I dig it a little bit. I mean, it kind of gave me the old Halloween Havoc vibes from WCW back in the day. I feel like they still need to do a little bit more. Oh, wow. Sorry, Dodgers reaction. They do need to do a little bit more as far as like maybe creativity, because all their shows, all their pay-per-views, Battle of the Belts, whatever they want to call it, they all look the same. So I'd like a little bit more variety, a little bit more, you know, colorful. But I mean, I like that they're trying. So I mean, I guess the C plus for effort, or the A for effort, but C plus overall.
Leonard Jones says they need a giant Halloween Havoc pumpkin. Man, that Halloween.
Yeah.
Havoc demon pumpkin was so cool. Where is that? Get that thing out of the storage unit, Triple H. I know you know where it is.
It's in Stanford.
If I was running that company, it would go broke, but I would have the demon up and running 24/7 outside my office. Okay, we'd go broke, but it'd be a pretty cool couple months before I ruined the company.
What's like a thing that you'd want if you had your pick on any one, whatever it is, to pick from whatever the warehouse, wherever their memorabilia center, like what's the one thing you would want? That's your number one option.
Yes, Halloween Havoc demon. That's what I'd want, and it would be up. All my neighbors would complain, and I'd say deal with it. And my power bill would be atrocious, but I would find a way to make it work.
You know what I would want, actually? What's left of that broken egg from Halloween. From Survivor Series
1990. Yes.
Just put it out there on the front lawn and have my neighbors go, what the heck is that? And just look up in the sky. What hatched from that thing?
Everyone seems to say Stephen Camp says the SmackDown fist. Leonard Jones says the SmackDown fist on the front of my house. Aaron Mick says the blue steel cage. I got a question for you guys. They did a close up now on the I didn't see all the tombstones, Jimmy, but one of them said Inner Circle, which I got a little chuckle out of. But one of them, they zoomed in on it. It said poor Stephen. Is that a reference I'm not understanding? Or George, do you get that? Is that like or anyone in the chat, poor Steven? Is that a joke or a reference I'm missing? Let me know in the chat if you guys get it, because I just assume it was whatever, but I saw Inner Circle on one of them, so I know there's got to be a thing to it. I'm wondering if it's an inside joke or like a different name for somebody else, you know.
I know the WCW ones, those ones were kind of inside jokes, so I'm really curious if the AEW ones did too.
So in any case, as everyone's looking at that and answering that question, Adam Page cuts a promo and says that Jay White can blame Christian Cage for his earlier loss, but Adam Page is the one who hurt Jay White and put him on the shelf. Adam Page knows what Jay White's strategy will be. He's going to go after Adam Page's leg. But what will Page do? Hit him? Strangle his friends? Burn down his house? Jimmy, are you digging this psychotic cowboy?
I am digging Adam Page. I like the Hangman in this current iteration. The only thing is, sometimes you don't need to go so long in your promo, especially when you're a big-time heel like he is. Get to your point, hit the marks that you need to hit, hit the bullet points. But again, it felt a little drawn out to me. That's all.
That's fair. George, do you like this Adam Page guy?
Yeah, I think his heel version is much better than the babyface version. But like I said, we're seeing a lot more depth to a lot of characters, and Hangman is one of them. We saw a side of him that we never saw before when it came to his feud with Swerve. So now it's like, how can he continue that? How is he just going to be just everything revolving around Swerve and whatnot? But we're seeing a lot more depth to it. So I really dig this, what we're seeing with Adam Page, and seeing, I'm hoping that maybe he'll get like a nice run as a world champion as a heel sometime soon.
Adam Page is one of my favorite characters of the past 5 years, so I'm absolutely digging this. I do love how he's not just letting what happened with Swerve disappear. Like, he's reminding us he's kind of crazy. So if he's, you know, it's in different ways, but it reminds me a lot of like Mick Foley, where he's like, hey, look, if I'm willing to do all this stuff, what'll I do in our match, you know, this weekend or whatever? And you're kind of, oh yeah, what will he do? And so now he's got that sort of aura around him, a different aura, but you know what I'm saying, that he could, you know, you don't know what to expect. I'm not trying to compare him. Mick Foley's a legend, you know, everyone get out of my DMs. I get it. But I like that he's doing this. So, speaking of psychopaths, John Moxley and the crew roll out, and Moxley says he wanted Orange Cassidy and he cut all the distractions away from him. John Moxley reminds us too many people in AEW got fat and happy with their paychecks. So Moxley says that Orange Cassidy doesn't want anyone to get hurt, but it's too late for that. Moxley is about to cripple his own teammate Wheeler Yuta, luring Orange Cassidy to make the save, but it's a trap. Orange Cassidy and Dark Order are dismantled until Darby Allin descends from the rafters. More locker room members charge the ring, and eventually the numbers game allow the AEW locker room to stand tall. Before we get to a tag team match, we'll talk about the tag team match in a bit. But George, I thought this was pitch perfect for how far Moxley is willing to go, threatening Yuta. Yuta still being kind of brainwashed enough afterwards to still be wanting to team with Moxley afterwards. And it was a little thing, but I loved how, even though he says he's not a leader, the first person out there was Orange Cassidy, and the rest of the locker room followed. I absolutely dug this.
Yeah, I really like this segment. There was a lot of layers when it came to this segment, just with everything with Orange Cassidy, with Moxley, with Yuta. That is something I want to keep my eye on, especially when you had, it looks like they were about to take him out. So maybe it's like Yuta trying to embrace the dark side in order to, you know, continue on and maybe be the saving grace for AEW down the road. I think there's a lot going on with this, and I really, really liked how insane it was. It really had that kind of, like, I've been saying before for a while, where Monday Night Raw for a long time, not so much recently, but for a long time, even though it was live every week, it was still too polished and still too overproduced. And they always had the, oh, when it's live, anything can happen. And I feel like we saw that tonight. We saw that with this segment, where it really felt like this was just pure anarchy, but I loved every single second of it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one, Jimmy. I saw your reactions. I think you disagree. I will say my nitpick here, because we got to throw nitpicks everywhere. Darby coming from the ceiling should have been highlighted a bit more. Like, it should have been one of those things where we see him coming down and we all go, oh my goodness, how crazy. Where instead it was kind of like he was in the background. You're like, whoa, who's that? Yeah. Is that Darby? Who's that? What's that pink thing coming from the ceiling? But other than that, I dug this. Do you disagree?
A little bit, because they came out through the crowd. And what have we been seeing for the last, especially last week? The entire, not the entire locker room, but a vast majority of them waiting for them. So here they are walking into the arena and nobody comes out until they threaten one of their own, Wheeler Yuta. And that's what made Orange Cassidy come out to make the save. As soon as they hit the ring, he should have been out there. The rest of the crew should have been out there and it should have been anarchy. Bottom line, that's because that's what you've been teasing. They've been waiting outside the building for them to show up for weeks now. And now all of a sudden they walk in, you know, just stroll in like nothing's going on. That bothered me. To me, that made zero sense.
I get what you're saying. I think because they needed a leader to lead. They needed their Captain America to bring them out there. I feel like to merge what happened with what you said, though, it maybe would have been kind of cool as if people ran out there like Dark Order, got wrecked. But then when Orange Cassidy came out, he helped turn the tide and helped bring everyone back instead. You know what I mean? Like, and, oh, now that he's kind of our leader, he's rallying us to stand up to these guys.
And to your point about Darby, when Sting used to rappel from the ceiling, how did they shoot that in WCW?
They looked and up even, at and, it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what they should have done with Darby.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. They needed to definitely, like, that should have been a focal point and a bigger moment too.
Right.
I kind of felt like he got wrecked pretty quick for that big entrance also, because he came down, he put, I think, Claudio in a sleeper and then got put right through the announce table. So it was a little bit like, and George just getting ready, like he's getting excited about this fight. Nothing to do with the baseball game going right now. I love this. This leads right into the Private Party Young Bucks Tag Team Championship match. Christopher Daniels earlier in the night warns Private Party of the seriousness of putting their team on the line and reminds them of SCU's fate to the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks wait until Mox's group is gone before coming to the ring, staying consistent with their cowardice in previous situations. During the match, Matt Jackson tries to use the ring bell on Isaiah Cassidy, but Mark Quinn stops him, only to accidentally hit Cassidy himself. Match continues as Okada hits a tombstone on Mark Quinn to the outside, and I think it's appropriate that Halloween show has a tombstone in it, leaving Isaiah Cassidy, who puts on a heroic effort until Quinn is able to make the comeback, and the two somehow, someway win and become the new tag team champions of the world. George Hermosa, I got to admit where I was wrong. You know, you've come around on Kyle Fletcher. Going into this, I was like, you know what? I didn't believe in Private Party. Didn't believe in them. And I was just like, you know what? I think they need to break up. I think
it's because you weren't invited.
I wasn't invited. It was private. And I doubted them, but I loved this matchup. And it was a perfect example, in my opinion, of the storytelling of a match that slowly throughout this match, I started getting behind them. And I cheered when they won. I was like, they did it. I had that. They did it. I can't believe they did it. I love the team. This to me was a good example. Everyone says you can't tell stories with wrestling matches. I feel like this story was the wrestling match and I bought into them completely.
Yeah, this was such a fun match. I mean, over 5 years in the making when it came to their championship win, going back to that first win over the Young Bucks. But yeah, this was just fun. I love the when Okada came out and gave them the tombstone, and it really did look like we were going to see a Young Bucks victory. But yeah, we saw this is the part where I feel like a lot of baby faces need to study in terms of, you know, when to show the fire, when to show the struggle, when to show the comeback. And I really feel like Private Party nailed all these things. And I thought it was great. I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of title reign that Private Party is going to have.
Jimmy, we'll talk a little bit about what the future of the Young Bucks holds, because I feel like that has been showed to us. Talk to me a bit about the match, your thoughts on it, the Private Party as the champions, and kind of your thoughts on the handing off of the titles to a team like this that has always been an underdog team there since the beginning. We've heard the story. And character-wise, if it fits or not, like just kind of to help add to that moment, do you feel like that was the right call?
It was an interesting call, to say the least. I didn't expect it, and I don't think the fans expected it, but it completely out of character for this current iteration of the Young Bucks. And can we talk about what happened after that, after they handed the titles off when they left?
We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. But as far as the match itself goes, it was a fun match. The crowd was into it. They popped for everything, all the big spots, everything. I'm not a big fan of tombstoning someone on the outside on the cement floor and them coming back. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, if you want me to nitpick, if that's what I'm nitpicking about, hey. But the crowd loved it, and that's your main barometer as to whether a match was successful or not, right?
Jimmy, it's a Halloween episode. You need tombstones. That's
remember like those like in the sitcoms, they would always have like the Halloween episode of the sitcoms, and it'd mm-hmm. always be some kind of like supernatural thing where it's like, you know, this episode doesn't really count. It's just, we're just having a fun Halloween episode. I feel like there's some things we need to be like, okay, you know, this one didn't really count, you know?
It's a Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah, exactly.
We got a handful of promos we'll just kind of get through real quick. We had Jamie Hayter and Penelope Ford going at it face to face. The Patriarchy calls out Hook for next week. Anna Jay and Mariah May have a video package, and the Learning Tree shows us that the Ocho is dead. Long live the Nueve. And Mark Briscoe says next week they're gonna have a matchup. Jimmy, anything to take away from these quick promos? Usually these promos are pretty self-explanatory, but for a completionist's sake, I always like to mention them.
Yeah, I hear you. I find it funny that now that Jericho does the hi, guys, hi, the crowd does it as well.
Which yeah. Is completely... We're all puppets.
Yeah, exactly. Hi, guys. Oh, hi, Chris. Hi. But you know who I'm liking as you guys? I know who you guys like in the trio of the Learning Tree, but Big Bill is starting to really come out of that. He wasn't in a shell, but he's starting to find himself.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying that. And as far, Mark Briscoe, he's found something that connects with mm-hmm. the audience. The way he presents himself, the way, you know, that energy, that fire, it's infectious.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. And Mark Briscoe right now is very entertaining, and he's very engaging. And the audience is climbing on board. And you know what? I'm climbing on board, too.
Yeah, George, something we've given AEW a hard time about in the past is sometimes forgetting about people for a long time. I think they did a good job with video packages of reminding us of who is who and what's going on. And so now that it's been maybe a week since the Patriarchy has been on TV, I'm still remembering, oh, yeah, they've got the thing going with Hook. They're still reminding me of that. I agree with Jimmy Corderas. I've said before, I think Brian Keith and Big Bill are both really shining in this group. I think it's doing them a lot of favors. And Mark Briscoe, I am ready for him to do big things, like on AEW Dynamite, not Ring of Honor, but like mm-hmm. to start having consistent rivalries on the flagship.
Yeah. Brian Keith, he's such a gem. Like he really does add so much to the Learning Tree. And I dig it. I know we've all been very critical about Chris Jericho and the Learning Tree in the past, but I like kind of iteration. Speak for yourself, George.
I'm not critical at all.
I like this iteration. And I honestly, and I know I wasn't here last week, so I don't want to take too much time into it, but I was fine with it. I was fine with the title change. I thought it was completely fine. What I didn't like is that Mark Briscoe was a complete afterthought. It's like, Jericho and then Tomohiro Ishii comes out. Like, oh, by the way, who cares about that? The guy that was just champion and just lost it. But I'm completely okay with Jericho being the Nueve. So I thought that was fine. But yeah, I like this kind of aspect where maybe less is more. We don't need to see him in 18 segments kind of giving his little Learning Tree facts. But if anything, we're going to talk about promos. I want to say, because I know we don't really cover Collision or Rampage on here, but the person that needs to be on TV, on not just on a weekly basis, not a bi-weekly basis, but on a tri-weekly basis, is
Dalton Castle.
Close.
That's a good one, though.
Harley Cameron.
Yes.
She's yes. somebody who every single time she has some kind of microphone in front of her or whatever kind of segment promo it is, holy moly, talk about entertainment factor. She is just the full package when it comes to that. Like, I feel like she is to the point where she should be teaching promo class to a lot of people because she just knocks it out of the park every single time.
Yeah. I agree. And she gets it. She does it mm-hmm. in a way too, where she knows sometimes she's supposed to be the slipping on a banana peel.
Her character. Timing is impeccable.
She's fantastic. And she seems like an incredible person. Whenever you see her in like out of the ring promos, she seems like a nice person mm-hmm. too. So wishing her success. Daniel Garcia, not wishing success for Jack Perry, though, slams him up against the wall, says he's going to take the championship from him. And Perry says, hey, you used to dance for me, before heading to the Elite's locker room where they're shredding some paperwork and getting out of there before abandoning Cutler, who's attacked while Christopher Daniels is forced to watch by the Death Riders. I'm just going to call them the Death Riders, Jimmy. We alluded to this one a second ago. Thoughts on the Young Bucks tucking tail and running?
Yeah, it's interesting. They're going to work from home. I don't know how you have a match from home. That's kind of interesting. Virtual matches, I guess, they're going
to
have right now.
Welcome to 2020.
I am one who's giving Jack Perry credit for making the best of a bad situation for ever since that video. I've said it here before several times, but I want him to be more heelish and stop trying to be tough guy Jack Perry. Because when Daniel Garcia had him pinned against the wall, he was smiling. I didn't like that. I would have liked to have seen a look of concern on his face. He doesn't have to look like he's scared out of his wits. Just a look of concern like, oh, wait a minute here. Daniel Garcia is serious. Instead of, you know, bowing up and putting his head against Daniel, you know, right there, that's when Daniel Garcia should have just laid him out. When he's trying to butt heads with him, no. That's not heel.
See, I don't know. I was getting Raven vibes from him in that. I felt like something Raven would do, where he would laugh because even though he's getting shoved around, he knows he's getting under the skin of the other guy.
Yeah, I agree with Jack.
I don't know.
George, your thoughts?
No, I completely agree. I thought that first. I had to rewind it a little bit. I'm like, oh, is he smiling? But it was. I think it was just kind of like a, hey, you know, you think you got me, but I really got you. Kind of like we see it a lot in UFC too, where some of the guy gets hit and he'll just kind of like, you know, smirk because like, oh, you think that hurt me? Oh, you know, you ain't seen that yet.
Yeah. Talk to me, Jimmy, about the Young Bucks tucking tail and running. Jerry Dean says Bucks doing the Briscoe and Pat Patterson route. It's interesting. I saw a lot of speculation on the papers they were shredding backstage. I don't think that's actually going to mean. I think they were just trying to make it clear they were trying to get out of there and cover their tracks. But I thought this was fascinating. Clearly the Death Riders are after the Young Bucks and no one is safe. I loved what this scene implied, Jimmy.
Well, what were they shredding? That's the question. Were they shredding just documents? Were they shredding show notes? Were they shredding run sheets, or were they shredding contracts? You know, what were they shredding? That's the big question. And them tucking tail and running, will they be the saviors of AEW? To be honest with you, I hope not. I know they're AEW originals and they're EVPs, but at the same time, I'd rather it be someone else. I'm trying to figure out who. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to add on to that because in a way I agree, but I feel like I want to see another step. And George, let me know if I'm overthinking this, but I want them to try to be. I want them to be forced to be the saviors of AEW because the Death Riders are coming after them. I want them to valiantly try to stop the Death Riders, but valiant attempts never end in success, as we know. I want them to fail, and it's someone else, a younger person or someone who maybe has been overlooked, that actually comes and saves the day. Maybe it's a returning Ricky Starks and Wardlow that come and save the day. Maybe it's another team that I'm not thinking of off the top of my head that are the ones that actually make the save. But I would love to see the Young Bucks try because they have to, but they fail for the next generation to be the ones to make the save.
I do think they're leading onto something in regards to they're kind of being the hesitant ones as far as like maybe they're a little scared, but are they or are they not? But I do think we are seeing some kind of Young Bucks. I don't want them to be the saviors, like you said, but I do want them to at least, you know, defend the company that they started. You know, just something. Give me something.
I want them to be like, I want it to be like Darth Vader at the end of Star Wars. Like, he does turn to the good side, but it costs him in the end. He doesn't make it. That's right. I'm comparing Nicholas and Matt Jackson to Darth Vader. But I just, they, in a way, I want them to have the turn, but I want them to be victims at the end of the day. Because I want us to all be like, oh my God, they destroyed the Bucks. I think that would make the Death Riders look even more menacing. It would make whoever does step up seem even like a bigger deal. And I just think that that would be a cool thing there. So I will say, I said before a while back when they hit the pile driver on Tony Khan, I said, I love the idea, but I just didn't feel like these guys were the killers that needed to be in that spot. I feel like if we went back in time and we had the Death Riders be the ones that hit Tony Khan with a pile driver, it would be a whole different stratosphere because they have that menacing mentality. You'd be like, oh, these guys are absolutely dangerous. I think it would have hit way different if it was Moxley who did it instead of the Young Bucks, personally. We get to Camille versus Chris Statlander. Haas sprint with Statlander getting the win in a nice and clean way. Mercedes then attacks Statlander from behind, tells Camille to go to the back, and says, if you want something done, you got to do it yourself. Jimmy, I loved this episode. I love Fright Night. Not quite from top to bottom. You see, there was one thing that didn't sit well with your boy Jack Farmer, and it was this match. I love Chris Statlander. I love her. I think she's fantastic. I want all the good things for her. But I think you know where I'm going with this. Camille, just this is too early. What are your thoughts?
Exactly too early. She got Wardlowed already. Let's put it that way. You know, she comes in as this big heater. Coming in with a great reputation. Anybody who's seen her work in the NWA knows that she has the talent and works as a big, strong, woman in the ring. Mm-hmm. And tonight, I hate to put it this way, and I hope I don't get canceled for this. Have your heater spayed or neutered. That's what they did tonight. I'm sorry. It's just what they did was they killed her off in one episode. But maybe actually in 3 weeks in a row. It took
three weeks. I was going to say it's more than one episode.
Yeah. But tonight was the final pull the rug out from under.
Now, my hope here, George, is. Again, I love Statlander. I love that she's in the spot. I'm happy for her. At the end of the day, this is good for her, and I'm cool with Statlander versus Mercedes Moné. I feel like that we talked earlier about how AEW sometimes just rushes through stories. It feels like they said, we want to get to Camille and Mercedes having issues, and they just got there as fast as they could instead of building up that relationship because it feels like that's where they're going.
I'm going to leave it be a cop out and be a little wait and see because I want to see how the follow up is because I didn't really have too much of a problem with her losing because if anything, it put over to me Chris Statlander even more and it really helped her set up. I think it's going to be the inevitable re-coronation because I know she's a former TBS champion of a Chris Statlander defeating Mercedes Moné maybe at upcoming In Full Gear. But yeah, I thought it was fine. I thought it really showed Statlander is one of the top players in AEW. And I think, we'll see what ends up happening with Camille. But I think, like I said, I'm okay with it.
I just think Camille, it's too early for Camille to be eating losses. She should have been unbeaten for months.
But maybe she's not that girl, though. Maybe she's not that female. Maybe we're the ones that are overhyping her too much when maybe she's not really there for that.
I don't know. I disagree, George. They brought her in to be the muscle, the bodyguard, the heater, so to speak. She should have been treated kind of like, again, making comparisons. She should have been kind of like China and have that presence. And they took that all away in the last couple of weeks.
But it's hard because China was really one of a kind back then. Now there's a lot of female. Like Chris Talender looks similar in terms of body wise with a Camille, and back then China was really like she really was the ninth wonder of the world. Nowadays there's a lot of people that we just saw somebody new on NXT show up that is pretty much similar built to a Camille.
You keep them apart as long as possible.
I mean that's look again. I'm happy with like this is not against Chris Statlander. I am a huge fan of hers. I can't say that enough. I've always said I had the chance to interview her in at one of the post media scrums. She has an aura. She's someone like this person is plus she wrestles great, everything. But I think they should have made Camille like the former NWA women's champion that set the record for the title hold. Camille, she should have made her they should have had her at least seem unstoppable for a while. She never even really got out of the gates as an unstoppable force. And hopefully they turn that around. But man, rough couple weeks for Camille. We move on to the main event of the evening. Swerve Strickland versus Shelton Benjamin. Banger of a matchup, with Swerve Strickland finding a way to get the win over Shelton Benjamin while MVP makes a phone call. And here comes Bobby Lashley. Ooh. Lashley gets the hurt lock on Swerve, and then the Hurt Syndicate take out a gaggle of security as MVP says, "Guess who's back in business?" George, I can see you're super excited to talk about this and nothing else. What's your thoughts on this main event?
I thought the main event was great. I really love Shelton Benjamin's got this. He feels like he's got this newfound on life. I saw a lot of Brock Lesnar vibes as far as a lot of the Germans giving a Swerve. I thought we were going to see a little bit of that, especially with how we saw Shelton going up against Sammy Guevara last week. But yeah, I thought this was a great match. Swerve obviously is fantastic, is amazing. We can't say enough great things about Swerve. And even though somebody mentioned it earlier in the chat as far as the worst kept secret, but who cares? There's a lot of worst kept secrets that still turn out pretty awesome. But it's really cool seeing Bobby Lashley in a new environment. We saw him dominate Impact. Like 10 years ago, we saw him dominate, be the dominator, the almighty dominator in WWE, former two-time WWE champion. And I think it's only a matter of time before we see Bobby Lashley become AEW world champion.
This was, first off, Swerve and Shelton Benjamin having this kind of match on this kind of stage. This is going to sound anti-WWE. It's absolutely not. It's pro multiple companies. If there was no AEW, I don't think we would have had this kind of set up for these two guys, just based off of the time available in WWE. And this is one of the reasons why it's cool that there's multiple places, because these guys, main event, big fight feel, great matchup between these two guys who I feel like are going to continue to have big moments in AEW. Jimmy, the match was cool. Of course, the aftermath is what was really cool. Bobby Lashley, of all the WWE guys that have come to AEW, this one, and this isn't a shot or a negative, but for this one, for me, feels the most like a WWE guy standing in an AEW ring. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because of how he's built, or because he's been so much a part of WWE TV the past few years or whatever. But this one was the felt like the most a WWE guy in AEW. To me,
I could see that. For me, it's more MVP feels more like a WWE guy, and Shelton, because there was a time there where Bobby had left and come back. So for them, they were the longer tenured ones. But that being said, I enjoyed this match very much. And like you said, George, there's a newfound confidence in Shelton. He looks the part, and he looks great. But if I'm going to be nitpicky, I had an issue with the finish. Swerve going over clean.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, Shelton, yes, he had two big outings the last few weeks. Then they put this match on him. There should have been, again, fantasy booking for me. Why not have Swerve go to the top like he's going to do the two-legged stomp? Hit Lashley's music. He comes. Can you imagine the visual of a shocked Swerve standing on the top rope, looking out into the entranceway? This is a situation where a DQ finish or a screw job finish would have worked for me anyways. Again, I'm being nitpicky. That way you still save Shelton. His record is still clean. He doesn't eat a clean pin, and the Hurt Syndicate is off and running.
I was going to ask, like, because there's a lot of kind of similar vibes but in terms of, you know, Shelton came in as a monster and we all know how great he can be. And with Camille, we're saying a lot of the same things. So I was curious if anybody was going to say, oh, it's not okay with Camille, but it's okay that Shelton took a loss already. So I'm really happy that you're consistent, because, you know.
Yeah. Well, for me, again, that's my opinion. I didn't like it.
Well, I think the roles are different, too. Between the two wrestlers, though, I think they're Camille is a bodyguard, where ain't nobody a bodyguard for Bobby Lashley.
Oh no,
could you imagine the poor guy who has to be Bobby Lashley's bodyguard and be half his size? to get to him, you got to get through me. But I will say, I thought that Lashley was really missing that pyro when he points to the sides, though.
Yeah, I was expecting that.
You need to get that pyro there when he does the points. I don't know what it costs, Tony, but I approve it. You can put it on your expense report. Get him some pyro.
It's a write-off. It's a business, yeah. Business
it's,
expense.
It's like making money. Yeah. I will say, maybe I missed it, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. We had an overrun, but I didn't hear them say we have an overrun this time around. I think they just let it happen, unless I missed it.
You mean on Twitter or on commentary?
On commentary. Did they say it on Twitter?
I mean, Shivani kind of said it, like, we'll be with this match as long as we, as long as
it takes. Yeah,
but that was after we already passed the mark, though. I think it wasn't like at 250, or it was 250. It wasn't like at 50 minute mark going. And by the way, we have an overrun tonight.
Right. I think I even looked at my watch here, my Fitbit, and said 9:49 when he said we're going to stay with this match as long as it takes.
Okay. It's not as bad, though. That doesn't bother me as much. But I really enjoyed this. I'm really excited about Lashley being in WWE. And I already see people in the chat talking about the potential of a death. I'm just calling them Death Riders from now on. Mm-hmm. Death Riders versus Hurt Syndicate, which I think is a money matchup when that comes down. Jimmy, I have a last question before we get into our wrap-ups, though. After the match, MVP got on his cell phone and made a phone call. Mm-hmm. Now, that was something that Paul Heyman was doing quite a bit in WWE for a while. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that is something we should consider a Paul Heyman thing, or is the idea of using your cell phone at this point so common that it's public property, public domain? Yeah, does that make sense, what I'm asking? Do you get what I'm talking about?
No, I get what you're saying. The Paul Heyman one was better because he had that big old phone with the antennas sticking out of it.
Well, recently he'd always like do this where he'd talk into it and you'd have like Roman Reigns.
Or the Roman Reigns. Yeah. When he'd have that one. Yeah. It's okay. What they've done in wrestling for the entire iteration of this industry is borrow from other. Now, his is a little different. I guess he's putting his own little spin on it, but at the same time, yeah, I guess you could say it is a little too Heyman-esque.
Mm-hmm. It was, I think it's fine. It doesn't bother me, but I figure I was just like, let's see how people react to that one. Right. George Bartley says, did you, I think, hear the 90-second call out, 45 and 30 seconds? I did hear that, unfortunately. Didn't ruin it for me, but it was a little bit of like, we can hear your guys talking, your guys. That does it for us. So I love this episode. I really enjoyed Fright Night. Everyone in the chat, let us know your final thoughts. Again, like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star reviews. Jimmy, final thoughts, and where can the world find you online?
Well, it was an up and down episode. There was stuff I could nitpick about, which I did. And, you know, at least they're, like you said, they're starting to work on characters and whether they have them go in the right direction. Again, wait and see attitude. I'm taking the George Hermosa route and wait and see. And as far as where you can find me here on Wednesday nights with you guys, the Roughing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner, and I. This week we had TNA head official Daniel Spencer on. We had an all referee episode, so it was all stripes. And this week on the Huge Pop Radio Show on TSN Radio and iHeart Radio up here in Canada with my good buddy Donnie Da Silva, Moz and Thrasher, the Headbangers, were on. And we had a fun chat with those guys. So if you get a chance, check that out as well. You can check out my Ref and Rants from Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms. Just, again, being nitpicky there as well, trying to tighten screws that I think need tightening.
Yeah, the Headbangers, I think, if you were growing up during that time, was a favorite or a unfavorite, depending, I guess, on who you depending on what your alliances were. But I love the Headbangers. They were super fun.
And tomorrow you can find me in the dentist chair.
Yeah. Good luck. Hopefully it's not Isaac Yankum.
Yeah. Love that one. Love the reference.
George, final thoughts, and where can we find you online?
Final thoughts. I thought it was a pretty good show overall. Obviously, I'm a little distracted because they're three outs away from, you know, winning. But yeah, I thought it was a good show. Like I said, I liked a lot of the character progression that we've seen, especially this week. And I hope we continue seeing it next week. But yeah, just overall, I thought it was great. You can watch me or follow me at Ghermoza, Ghermoza. You can follow my wrestling channel, The Wrestling Chatter, on YouTube. We got an interview with Alex Wright dropping very, very soon, maybe within 24 hours. Going to get dropped very soon. They got Jack Farmer in the middle, who interviewed a former WCW TV and Cruiserweight champion, Alex Wright. And that was a very, very fun interview. I really, really enjoyed it. And hopefully you guys will all enjoy it as well.
Yeah, that was a really fun one. In fact, I love this episode, just to say. I really enjoyed this episode. I think AEW has been super fun lately. Nothing's perfect, but man, this was fun. It was wild. It was crazy. It was a good time. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. And you can check me out on Mondays on Wrestling Inc. covering Raw. You can check me out on Wednesdays covering AEW Dynamite. So talk about calling it down the middle. I'm on both shows, folks. But also, as George alluded to, I chatted with Alex Wright, none other than Berlin. That's right. Mm-hmm. I call him Berlin. But we had a great chat. I'm very proud. It was another one where the guy afterwards, they said, "This is a fun interview. You asked a lot of questions people don't ask." So it was always a proud moment as a interviewer when that gets to happen. We chat about all sorts of fun stuff. I have him name his Mount Rushmore of German or European wrestlers. I also explained to him what Mount Rushmore is in case he doesn't know, because he lives in Europe. I think he knew, but I over-explained it. So you can hear Alex Wright's Mount Rushmore of European wrestlers. See what he has to say about that and so much more. That does it for us. Make sure to follow at Wrestling Inc. for all the latest wrestling news. Make sure to tune in Friday for the After SmackDown show. And make sure to just do your best and be yourself. I'm hitting
Wait. Saturday? Is there nothing Saturday?
Oh, that's right. Saturday. Oh, my goodness. Ryan would have had my head over at Wrestling Inc. Tower if I did not promote this. Crown Jewel. Covering Crown Jewel. I'm going to be Jimmy, are you going to be covering Crown Jewel with us?
No, unfortunately not.
You're referee tried and true. You're just covering the guys here, making sure we're good.
I just show up, count three, and leave.
So, yes, we are going to be covering Crown Jewel on Saturday. I'm going to be on that show. I don't know who my partner is. I should probably double check that. But Ryan will have my head for that. Ryan, we appreciate all you do for us over at Wrestling Inc. Tower in Wrestling Inc. Mountain. Appreciate y'all.
It's you and Emily May.
Mm-hmm. Jack and Emily May, an incredible duo to talk about Crown Jewel. Make sure to tune into it. We'll be on right after that show. Until then, I'm hitting that end stream button. Boop.